there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wing podcast presented by Purina Pro Plan. A few weeks back, we at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever announced the launch of Habitat University. And I know you're scratching your head and you're, I don't remember them in March Madness. Yeah, well, we weren't in March Madness, but we launched in March. It's a free skills-based habitat and conservation training resource for students, biologists, landowners, PF and QF chapter volunteers, land managers, and habitat DIYers. And if you're not familiar with that term, it's do it yourself. Habitat University offers flexible online learning, certificates, hands-on opportunities, and bundle badges to help you succeed in your personal habitat projects. To help me add a bit of detail of what Habitat University is and what each of our target audiences who experience Habitat University can expect, I've got Jake Swafford with me, our private lands program manager who will break down Habitat University. And joining me as today's co-host, our marketing manager, Upland AF is what we refer to him around the office. And I'm not going to break down what AF means. You guys can figure that out. Andy Fondrick. Andy, thanks for joining me for this.
Yeah.
You didn't know I was going to call you Upland AF. I see you grinning.
I should have assumed that was going to come. And we have so many Andys and Andrews that if that's the term I get pegged with, then I think I can handle it. It works out well. So we'll let everybody decide how they want to take that little abbreviation.
Has Waggle embraced the idea of an Upland AF shirt in the upcoming collaboration?
Ooh, gosh, is that even going to be public yet? I don't know. I don't think they've embraced the Upland AF side, but maybe that's something we'll have to move on. I think there's a few other Upland orgs that would be fighting for that, the use of it. So
we'll leave that as an Easter egg for listeners of things to come with our organization. Jake, welcome into the conversation. Thank you very much for putting up with the Upland AF banter. You probably didn't even know that was Andy's nickname around the office.
I didn't, but I'd definitely buy a shirt or a hat with that on. And maybe hope to steal a little bit of that charisma in my Upland adventures.
There's got to be a little mustache over the top of AF.
Oh, for sure.
It depends on the time of year. I think we're back in the mustache side, but I think I got to give credit because I think the AF side came, I want to say RGS had a shirt said Upland AF, like way back when I started. And I think listeners will be familiar with Andrew Vavra mentioned it, and I may or may not have invested in that shirt six or seven years ago too.
I didn't know that. Well, credit to RGS, our friends at the Rough Grouse Society for coining the Upland AF term and for you to commandeer it as your own.
I think they went with Upland Awesome Forests. So we could take it and run a different direction if we wanted, but.
All right. I will leave this goofy banter for now. Jake, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a little while. I think, yeah. I want to say it was a pollinator
week. It was a pollinator week podcast that I got to jump on and help, I think, wade through some of the species that were coming out in those pollinator kits that we were handing out for new members during that June event. But
and as I look at you, which I can see you, our listeners can't, over your shoulder is a turkey. Mm-hmm. And you're joining us from Missouri.
Yep.
We before we started recording, we're talking turkeys. It is the heart of turkey season. So you're on brand as a Missouri. Let me ask you this. You grew up in Missouri, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm back living in my hometown right now. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I'm going to ask you your background and what you do for the organization, but I'm curious, like most folks would say South Dakota is the pheasant capital, you know, pheasant state, pheasant capital of the country. Bobwhite quail, you can make some arguments, but Texas historically harvests the most bobwhites, you know, so they're going to claim the quail capital of the country.
Yeah.
Sage grouse, it's Wyoming.
Yep.
For me, I think Missouri is the wild turkey capital of the country. Do you believe that as a Missourian? Did I pronounce that right? Is it a Missourian?
Missourian, yeah. Yeah.
Missourian. Okay.
I think you could definitely make the case for it. I know a lot of folks in Missouri that travel out of state to chase birds, but they always make sure they're back in time for Missouri turkey season here. And we get a fair number of out-of-state hunters as well. So I think we've got some of the, I think, better turkey numbers around. And I'm actually, I grew up around a lot of turkey hunters, but didn't get into it until about 5 or 6 years after I moved back from New Mexico, where I was out working as a farm bill biologist with lesser prairie chickens. So that's where I started with the org. And when I got back to northwestern Missouri, I was out just looking at all these great properties and you know, flushing turkeys out of CRP fields. And I thought, man, I ought to give this a chance. And it was really kind of fun because I grew up whitetail deer hunting. And that was kind of my tie into the hunting world. But not having a lot of knowledge and being a little farther away from the people that could teach me, turkey hunting was an opportunity to kind of get in there and be a new hunter and figure it out myself. So I struggled for a few years and then picked up a few tips, and now I'm pretty successful. I called in 2 birds last year, and that's the first time I punched both my Missouri tags. So I'm feeling pretty good about here in a couple of weeks when turkey season opens.
I got to tell you, as a turkey hunter in Minnesota, we've done quite a few South Dakota, Wisconsin, dabbled into Iowa, but my brother's a group and I that I go with, Missouri's definitely top of the out-of-state list between there and Nebraska. So you got a few more out-of-staters coming here eventually.
Well, I won't give away my spots then.
Come on up, Minnesota. I'll be liberal with mine. You can be more liberal down there. It'll be great. It'll be fine.
There we go. Yeah, we'll just trade.
Swap spot.
Before we dive into Habitat University, Jake, tell us a little bit about your background and what you do day-to-day for the organization.
Yeah. Well, I've been with PF and QF for, I guess, a little over 14 years now. So started by moving out to New Mexico, like I said a minute ago, working with lesser prairie chickens and ranchers out there, and then got a chance to move back to my home state, not my hometown, and was working as a farm bill biologist up in northwest Missouri. And that's where I got into CRP and pollinators, and then started working on some special monarch butterfly programs for landowners. And so that's kind of the last time I was on the podcast here talking about that specialty and expertise. And since then, you know, I've spent a lot of time just focusing on building conservation plans and helping landowners put habitat on the ground. And now that I'm in this private lands programs manager role, I get to help with a lot of our technical assistance work that's happening all over the country. So I get to support those programs, including our precision ag conservation specialists, our farm bill biologists, various things there, and now Habitat University, which is super exciting.
Cool. Well, we are going to dive into Habitat University. Before we get that rolling, I want to once again thank Purina Pro Plan, the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast, and the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission. My bird dog pups from Trammell to Izzy to Esky, and today with Gitch and Winter, they have always eaten Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat mission of our organization, which has always been incredibly important to me, but the most important thing for what I put in that dog food bowl is that Purina Pro Plan is a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Pro Plan was built for the working bird dog like yours and like mine. You can learn more at ProPlansport.com.
From Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever National Headquarters in St. Paul, Minnesota, this is Casey Sill with the Upland Newsroom, delivering top stories from the Habitat Organization and across the American upland. We begin today with an update on the Greyhound Act. In recent weeks, hunters have raised concerns about vague language in the farm bill that some thought could open the door for a ban on using live game lures for dog training. The proposed federal prohibitions on live lure training of dogs and open field coursing were removed from the latest version of the 2026 farm bill, thanks in part to the thousands of hunters and bird dog owners who called and emailed their representative. Moving on to Oklahoma, where Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's own Laura McIver was recently awarded the Conservation Heritage Award from the Oklahoma Wildlife Conservation Foundation. The award recognizes McIver's longtime commitment to upland habitat and wildlife conservation. McIver has been with the Habitat Organization since 2014 and has started 38 chapters in her tenure as an Oklahoma regional representative. In the land of Lincoln, a new $4.3 million grant has opened Illinois Department of Transportation land to habitat improvements. Less than 1% of Illinois' prairie remains intact, and IDOT is the largest holder of land in the state. The goal of the project is to make roadsides a source for wildlife habitat, and the grant will fund a 5-person habitat strike team, one strike team manager, trucks, UTVs, herbicide, seed, and all the other equipment needed for 5 years. The western U.S. is bracing for a historic wildfire season as spring arrives, according to a report from Wyoming Public Media. Record low snowpacks, early snowmelt, and record high temperatures have created some of the worst fire conditions in recent years. Fires in plain states like Nebraska and Wyoming have already burned over 1.6 million acres, and this month, above average potential for significant wildfires is expected in much of New Mexico and parts of Arizona, Colorado, and Wyoming. Many other grassland and prairie ecosystems in the West are also bracing for potentially significant burns in the coming months. We'll end today on a lighter note with the story of Juice, a 7-year-old Labrador retriever who was recently caught on camera retrieving live bullfrogs for his owner in Louisiana. As the Labrador versus GSP debate continues to rage across the PFNQF office, Juice offers yet another piece of evidence of the lab's superiority. Just some food for thought. Head over to OutdoorLife.com to see Juice in action. That'll do it this week. Reporting from PFNQF headquarters in St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Casey Sill.
All right. Habitat University. Jake, what's the the origin story for how that concept came to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm definitely not going to take the credit for it. This wasn't my idea to start with, but I can tell you where it kind of came from. And so, as we've got the largest group of private lands biologists in the country, so it's safe to say we do a fair amount of hiring and interviewing of folks that are looking to get into this field. And we started to see kind of a shift in the pathway that people were taking to get into wildlife careers. And so, years ago, most of the folks in the field grew up around farms and land management and just kind of had that different knowledge base and skill set. And now many are coming from different backgrounds, still very passionate about conservation, and still very valid and important focus on habitat and the environment, but just without some of the hands-on experience that a lot of the traditional last wave of biologists maybe had coming into this field. And so that's led to a gap in some of the more practical and field ready skills. You can have a really sound ecological understanding, but if you don't know the difference between a disc and a brush hog, then that's going to be challenging when you're out there talking to landowners and actually putting habitat on the ground.
So it sounds like sort of the difference between book smarts and street smarts from a biologist perspective.
Like, a little probably bit, yeah.
People coming out of college with really valuable degrees in ecology and biology and wildlife sciences, but maybe didn't grow up on a farm, a ranch, or as a hunter. And so they know theoretical, but not practical application to what they've learned. Is that, and I know I'm painting with an awfully broad brush a non-biologist, but how close am I?
I certainly was too. But I think that's safe to say, you know, everything, for those of us who have worked in private lands, I mean, even just the way that you communicate with those landowners, the language, the approach, and sometimes the kind of street credit that you walk in there with can impact those relationships and your ability. It doesn't have anything to do with your knowledge base or your understanding of the habitat work. It's about having that relationship and that ability to communicate that stuff. And so at the same time, we're seeing this kind of skills gap. We've also got more private lands biologists out on the landscape than we've ever had. We've got new staff coming in, and we've got landowners that are trying to do all this habitat work or a lot of this habitat work on their own. So landowners, partners, our staff, they all need the same kind of baseline skills to do this job. And everybody was kind of recreating, you know, training from scratch. Every organization, every agency, and resources for landowners, they're all working toward the same thing. So Habitat University is really about kind of solving that. So trying to provide a central hub where people, whether that's biologists, landowners, habitat DIYers, can learn how to do habitat work the right way.
If you add another parallel thought, it's like Orvis certified guides. Like if they meet certain criteria, it's like they get the Orvis stamp of approval. So, you know, if you look at our website for, you know, the microsite for Habitat University, you can find it at pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org. Habitat University is supported by Working Lands for Wildlife, which is a subsidiary of USDA, Farm Service Agency, another subsidiary of USDA, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So essentially what you're saying is these government entities that are also huge employers of private lands biologists have sort of given their Orvis stamp of approval to this Habitat University approach to closing that knowledge gap. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And, you know, partners are coming in at different levels right now, but certainly they're interested in the concept and the idea. And so they see the value in providing that training, whether it's for our staff, for their staff, or for the landowners that they're working with. And so as somebody who's worked out of a USDA office a lot, you know, they have trainings for their staff, but some of the resources or interactive kind of engaging trainings that they have for landowners aren't always there. And so supporting us in Habitat University is a way that we can try to better inform the landowners that are coming into their offices.
I think it's super critical or important because we've hit private lands biologists or private lands work here quite a bit already in this first, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. And especially on the upland side, you know, having all that quality habitat where birds aren't necessarily migrating, they're living in a pretty set area and they're only going to live within the quality habitat they have. So to your point of having that many private lands biologists working on private lands to make sure that the healthy populations aren't just being protected on public, where a lot of our audience thinks, right? It's also that if they go across a fence post, there's that much better quality brood rearing or nesting habitat. And, you know, even as somebody who has just started doing some of our own food plots work up in northern Minnesota, it's not pheasant range, but it's turkey range all of a sudden, and it's grouse range. And a lot of these courses, you know, the one that I started diving into just a little bit here this week was the tools of the trades for Habitat Wins, and just the tools that you might need for different areas of the country to make some of this successful. Like some of those little digestible courses just really speak to the power of not only the pro side, but the DIYer side as well.
Yeah. So if you think about the courses and the overall framework of it, Jake, it's somewhat intuitive what Habitat University is, but then it's a bit vague as opposed to, like, you know, okay, I'm listening to this and I'm interested, you know, like Andy, I'm interested in improving my habitat on my own land. I'm interested in doing some things what's this habitat? You're like, what's it cost? How much time am I investing? Like, oh, tell me a little bit, like, you know, clear up some of that, that vague components of what this really means.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, Habitat University is built around short and practical courses. And so whether you're a farmer that's trying to sneak in a little bit of learning or get some information before you run out to harvest your crops, or a biologist trying to squeeze in some learning between landowner meetings, we want it to be kind of short and digestible. So most of the courses are around 15 to 60 minutes. They almost all have a little description in the bottom that'll give you an estimated time to complete there. They also are all pausable, so it saves your progress through. You're not committed if you start one. You can come back and finish it up at any time. Another point that you hit on, Bob, all these courses are free. So we're not charging to get into these courses. You can take one, you can take all of them, and your bill is going to be the same. It's free, and we intend to keep it that way for students. You know, courses are grouped into learning bundles. And so the way we've got it set up, in true, kind of embracing the university aspect of the name, we have semesters. So, fall, winter, and spring are kind of the timeframes that we're looking to roll content out. And they'll usually be, around 10 to 15 new courses, each one of those semesters that come out. And they're grouped into bundles. So a lot of times those semesters will have one particular bundle. There'll be some that come down the road as we gain more content that we can kind of piece together later. But right now those bundles are private lands biologist and conservation planner. There's a bundle on pollinators and quail. So we try to take the courses that are relevant to those topics and put them all together so that you don't have to kind of dig through the stack to find what might be relevant to you. So if you're interested in managing for, you know, we don't have a turkey bundle yet, Andy, but as you're working on your food plots and things like that, you might be able to click in there and see, okay, these are the courses that are relevant to this topic, so that you're armed with all the info you need going out there.
And, you know, some bundles go away too, right? Like if I think about, we just got done with a CRP general sign up, and there's some courses connected to maximizing your CRP enrollment offer. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not going to be relevant after the sign up closes. So it is a place that you can go to Habitat University and find some real time beneficial information, particularly as it relates to USDA conservation programs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got courses on kind of outlining what those different programs are. But then with this most recent CRP sign up, we wanted to get some information out there about what is CRP? What does the enrollment process look like? What does putting in an offer look like? And then a second course that really kind of dials in on the specifics for that this last sign up and maybe the state that you're in. And so some of that information will definitely expire or change between now and the next sign up. And so that course will either be taken down or updated. Luckily, the CRP overview course is pretty general. And so I think that one's going to be kind of a permanent fixture up there. But definitely we were excited for the opportunity to get that out there during a sign up. Sometimes the term semester might sound like, these courses are only available for a certain amount of time. And while we're going to maybe promote those courses or roll them out in for a specific season or something like that, once they're up, most of these courses are going to stay up. So the library is only going to continue to grow, and they won't be taken down. So once we release a new semester, those courses will, for the most part, just live on there and be available for you to take anytime or revisit anytime. So I'm hoping here, I think this fall, we're going to have a course on like seed drill calibration. And man, that's something every time I go to calibrate a drill, I could use a refresher course. And so hopefully that's a valuable resource for folks once that one's posted, because I know I'll be pulling it up on my phone while I'm out there.
Well, okay. So that leads to another thing that you know, when this concept first came up to me, I was like, I don't quite get it. Are we going to have professors, like a teacher on a video teaching a virtual course? Is it going to be like a PowerPoint that people flick, you know, click through on their own?
Right.
So talk through kind of the variety of different quote unquote courses and what a user can expect to experience.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of a mix. So it's not just one format. And that's a function of wanting to create content that works for different learning styles and being a little bit opportunistic about taking really high quality presentations that we already have or that are happening elsewhere and incorporating them into Habitat University. So some of these are recorded webinars that had really strong presenters and great content that we've just kind of pulled over. And so those courses run more like a YouTube video with a, you know, with the option for a quiz at the end. But a lot of them are kind of slide based where you can click through and either read the slide yourself, or it's got a voiceover so that if you learn better by listening, that's an option for you. And so, you know, it's a mixed bag. And as we continue to create content, we're working in more, pulling in more of these videos from the field. So videos of our staff calibrating a seat drill, videos of what edge feathering looks like. And so we'll continue to update some of these courses and just kind of update the format as we have more and more content that we're able to put into that.
You talked about the certificate that comes at the end, and that feels like a good place to differentiate between Habitat University and Habitat University Pro. So explain the difference in sort of the value of the certification that comes with it.
Yeah, and I can certainly, before we jump to that, I'll just say, like, you know, some of these courses do have quizzes. Most of those tend to be on the pro side. Just questions to check the learning through, kind of make sure you're paying attention, and then a short quiz at the end so that we can give you a certificate of completion. And if you're a professional in the field, or maybe a aspiring conservation biologist, a student finishing up school or looking to get your first job in the field, those certificates can certainly help as far as continuing education credits or drop those on your resume. I know our hiring managers are looking for those types of things. And so the certificates aren't just so that we can hand you a piece of paper. They're meant to be meaningful and impactful there. But yeah, the difference between pro and Habitat University, just we split them into the two tracks so that we could, and anybody's allowed to take either one. But we wanted to be able to kind of gear the courses maybe, you know, toward the more resource professional terminology and some of the things, how to work with partners in the same field office, how to talk to landowners. Like, those aren't things that the landowners and the DIYers are going to need to take, but super critical information for private lands biologists. And so pro is geared toward those biologists, students, and professionals. And then HU is for the landowners, contractors, volunteers, people doing the habitat work themselves. And that's more kind of hands-on understanding or courses that will hopefully provide a little bit more background so that maybe while they're working with their private lands biologists, they can understand the plans and the recommendations that they're making a little bit better.
I have a course suggestion that I did not find.
Okay.
And that would be explaining all the acronyms in the conservation biologist world. What CRP means.
Yeah. An alphabet soup course.
Right? I think that should be a 100 level Habitat University course that helps break this. There's more acronyms in conservation than we have in baseball. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's my dad is a journalism professor, and he's, over the years, he's told me many times, you're not making any sense. And I'm like, hey, this Boanga duck got to talk in this career. But I can assure you they all have meaning. And yeah, I could probably put a sentence together using almost almost exclusively acronyms.
Yeah. I've told this story before, but it's been a while. My very first week at Pheasants Forever, it was Pheasant Fest week in 2003. So I started 6 days before the very first ever Pheasant Fest. And it was a Saturday. Dave Nomsen, who was at that time Vice President of Government Affairs, so our primary point of contact with USDA. And he called me into a conference room. He's like, all right, you're going to write a press release about an MOU with NRCS focused on CRP. This is my sixth day. And I was like, I don't even know what language you're talking. I don't know what an MOU is. I think I know what USDA is. And I don't know what CRP means. You know, this is day six, you know. And it was real insightful. Like, there's this expectation that everybody knows these. So for the listeners, MOU is a memorandum of understanding, which is just fancy speak for an agreement. And obviously CRP nowadays is that I know what that means, but Conservation Reserve Program, USDA use, Department of Agriculture. But that is, you know, I think it's obvious for the non-industry professional that is one of the biggest limiting factors in understanding our world is the acronym soup. Mm-hmm. By which we live. So there's just a suggestion for a potential 100 level Habitat University class. Andy, you got to add on to that.
Well, I think it does. It speaks to just the complexity, but in reality, it's more complex than it needs to be, right? There's so much to this, the Habitat University or the Habitat University Pro, that, you know, there's this incredible value on the pro side in terms of equipment and in terms of the certifications. But even on the DIY side, as you have, you know, Jake, you've already kind of alluded to it, but as you have this language being spoken to you, and if you're sitting there trying to dissect everything that's going on, you're only retaining 30, 40, 50% of that conversation. And so really this concept does speak to the power of, you know, not only are you offering them in PowerPoints and whatever, but there's also videos and they're also being updated. And it's helping people in different levels of understanding, right? Whether they be DIY or program manager or, you know, professional or aspiring professional, to get on the same page and be able to cut that learning gap down so quickly and be valuable across many other platforms to have better partnerships and to have better product. And I think that, you know, even to Bob's suggestion, right? Like there's some super 100 level, 1000 level freshman style learning that has to be done. And this framework can cover all of that, right? It can cover that 1000 all the way up to the 4000 level classes. I think it speaks to Jake, the vision and what's been rolled out here already as that thing continues to go. So kudos.
What university did you go to that they had 1000 level courses? Weren't they all 100 level?
Like, yeah, 100 to like 300. Andy,
we just like to add a zero. You add a zero. Yeah. It sounds better.
Freshman
song 1000. Harvard of the North. Yes. Harvard of the North.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Yeah. University of Minnesota Duluth.
outstanding. Harvard of the North. Well, that is a great transition, though, Jake, for you to talk about kind of the different target audiences and maybe what courses you suggest they dive into. And, you know, since we're on the podcast and we know that there's a tremendous number of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapter volunteers listening,
yeah,
give them a taste of what courses they should sample.
Yeah, I think Habitat University is going to be a great resource for them. Just packed full of lots of information and tips for habitat projects for those chapters that get out and like to get their hands dirty, putting habitat in the ground, you know, directly. There's stuff on there for pheasants and quail management as well. And so if you are maybe a pheasant chapter that's, you know, on the edge of quail range and just want to have a better understanding there or vice versa, there's just tons of information. And then we've got how-tos on equipment, and we're growing that library as well. So again, whether you're doing management on your own property or looking to go do a project on a public area, you know, with your state agency, there's lots of information there on, you know, the how-tos for equipment and other practices. Edge feathering, drill calibration, prescribed burning, all of those things have courses right now where if you're not familiar with it, it's a great resource.
Hmm. It speaks to also audiences like landowners, land managers, habitat DIYers. I mean, in many ways, the chapter volunteer fits into all those same categories. To anything that you would distinguish different courses for some of those different audiences?
Yeah. And one thing I'd point out for our chapter volunteers, I think you're right, Bob, you know, a lot of them have a terrific understanding already of kind of the habitat principles, but we're always looking to bring in new members as well. And a lot of those habitat events can be a way to do that. And so these courses are a great kind of training tool if you've got new people coming into your chapter, whether that's getting them up to speed or getting volunteers that show up for an event, maybe ready to help out without having to do a training yourself. And so I just think that so many of these courses would apply to the chapters. Really, I think if you're going to be talking about programs to maybe your local area, we've got some great courses on there, introduction to conservation programs. And so if you're a chapter that wants to advocate for those, you know, CRP during a signup, that's a great one to take or to be able to share out with your, you know, wider audience so that more people understand those. And hopefully you can get more folks in your local area enrolled.
As I clicked through it, like to that question, and the one that continued to catch my eye as I was walking through and thinking, okay, from DIYer all the way up to professional, the course, it's a 45-minute course on a conservationist's guide to management. And if you want to do anything, right, on the conservation side, or you want to do any habitat, what better digestible track than to go through and be able to basically, this is anybody, right? It's DIY, it's professional, it's chapter, and it's a number of lessons between habitat diversity and management goals, like for that species that you're trying to manage, and understanding what might be needed on one part of the country versus another, but having a general overview to get you started with a quick 45-minute digestible. It just feels like there's a handful of these already, with more coming, as you've said, Jake, but for a DIYer to a chapter manager to whoever, this, the conservationist's guide to management, it should be a required piece if you want to be in a chapter in PF and QF, right? Like it's a great start, a great guide to understanding what that really means.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of our top performing courses right now. We've got more than 1,000 students in the two Habitat University schools with nearly 5,000 course enrollments, and a conservationist guide to management is always, every time we check that, is pushing the top enrollment of course. So I'm glad folks are finding that one, because I agree, it's kind of that key first step.
It's top enrollment plus one, because as soon as we're off the podcast, I'm hitting the enroll now button, and that'll be how I spend my lunch here today. So
you know, we spent a fair amount of time on sort of the entry point, you know, folks, DIYers, or, you know, relatively new to doing habitat work. I'm also thinking about, you know, before we get to the students and the biology, the professional, there's a middle piece there. I've got names like Tim Kraske and Scott Rawl, Kenny Reed in my mind, you know, local chapter volunteers, but absolutely have lived and breathed the habitat mission of the organization for decades on public land, but also on their own little pieces of heaven. They've done so much different work, from prescribed burns to nesting cover plantings on their property. What's in this course for that habitat junkie?
Yeah,
that is out there on the landscape.
I think we've got the more specific courses. And to Andy's point, I don't know that we'll get to the 1,000 level courses, but we're certainly, as we build more content, going to get more detailed and more dialed in. So we'll start offering those more 300 level courses. Right now, we've focused on pretty broad, and most of our most of the content is kind of meant to set the stage for that kind of, what does this look like at a national level? And we certainly anticipate getting down to like regional or state specific levels at a later point. But I think, you know, as even as somebody who's done a lot of management, there's usually like one or two things that maybe you haven't done a lot of. And so we've got those, you know, site prep secrets, you know, so site prep is super important. You can get a good planting in the ground, but I've seen over the years that like really good site prep just eliminates a lot of the hassles and problems down the road. So maybe you've been able to establish some great habitat on your place, but you had to fight some Sericea, or you had to fight those, you know, cool season grasses coming back in. And so site prep secrets is going to help make sure that you've got, you know, a good foundation to start that planting. And so hopefully improve the process, even for somebody who's been through that. Weed warriors, targeting invasive species without hurting your habitat. That's a great one that our partners at Bayer helped us put together. And so it's coming right from the experts there. But, you know, how we can really attack those invasive species without hurting. And a lot of times the habitat work that we've already put in, you know, the what we want to see out there, but make sure that we take care of those problems before they before we've got to start all over again or do something radical.
So thanks for clarifying exactly what weed warriors means.
Yeah,
that can lead somebody to a different conclusion. Students and biologists, give us some courses for folks to jump in if and they're thinking about this from a professional perspective.
Yeah, with students, you know, I think it's a huge opportunity. I really wish there was something like this when I was in school, just to help students stand out. And so I remember graduating with my degree and expecting just to get hired on with the state agency right away. I'd worked for them every summer, so I didn't think it'd be a problem. And, you know, 6 months in, I'm still flipping burgers at the Ruby Tuesday. And I think something that helps you stand out and stand up above the rest of the candidates. And so that's what we hope these courses can help students do. They can build real world skills before they ever get hired on with us. I think if you take the private lands biologist bundle and have an understanding of what these, you know, cost share programs are like, and again, you know, the conservationist guide to management, I mean, you're already 90% of the way to being able to, you know, do what an entry-level farm bill biologist does. And so they're going to show initiative, they're going to show that you've got the baseline knowledge, and that's going to stand out to hiring managers. And so I think taking the introduction course, intro to PF and QF and Habitat University, that's going to kind of explain what Habitat University is, give a little bit of background on who we are and why we're you know, putting this content out there. And then the private lands conservationist bundle is a great start. If you've got that, I'm definitely, and I see that in your on your resume, you're getting added to the interview stack. I at least want to talk to you.
Wow, that's a great insider's tip.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, if I would have known something like that, you know, it kind of shortcuts to getting to, you know, for what a lot of people are dream jobs.
Yeah,
right. And like, go through this, you learn what's important to the organization, the language they talk, and at the same time learning how the organization wants to talk with landowners. I mean, that's a great tip.
Yeah, I've had friends that have interviewed for farm bill positions and called me after the interview and went, I didn't know they were going to ask me, you know, what's a FORB? And I was like, well, first off, I feel like maybe you should have known that before you went into the interview. But, you know, those are the kind of questions that you're going to be ready to answer if you take a few of these courses. You're going to have that understanding again, where we're coming from, what's important to us, and really set you up for success, not just for the interview, but for those first couple of days, you know, and weeks on the job where we, otherwise it's kind of just throwing you out in the field and having you figure it out. These provide a lot of structure there. That kind of leads into, for our biologists, we're a big organization, and we don't always get to do as much onboarding and holding as we want to when we drop a new staff member out there on the landscape. You don't have another biologist close by with a lot of experience. It'd be pretty intimidating to get out there and figure out the alphabet soup and all these programs. And so these courses can help, you know, standardize that training, help speed things up, provide an easy way for you to at least start to fill in those gaps. Even if you're a more experienced biologist, I mentioned I got my start with the org by moving out to New Mexico, and I didn't know anything about grazing systems, and that was my primary job. And so a crash course in grazing would have been super helpful to get me started. And we've got that. We've got that on Habitat University. So,
right on. All right. We're going to round third and head towards home. I'm going to ask both of these guys for their closing thoughts. Before I do that, I want to remind our listeners that you can find Habitat University and Habitat University Pro on our websites, pheasantsforever.org, quailforever.org. It is under the conservation tab. Really easy to find under the conservation tab, Habitat University. As Jake mentioned, it's free, F-R-E-E. All the learning you can handle, from food plots to native seed drills, anything under the sun. And if there's something missing that you want to learn about, you can drop us an email at contact@pheasantsforever.org. Habitat University, put that in the subject line and it'll get to Jake as a suggestion. All right, closing thoughts. We'll start with Upland AF.
Yeah, I think just, you know, as we've talked through this, it's just more and more clear to me that there's such a need to be able to close this knowledge gap, right, between, you know, habitat junkies and pros, and having people on the same page. And these courses seem to have the power to do that. And, you know, as somebody who didn't grow up in an area where grazing was a major practice for hunting, like even that alone, you know, you learn, you head west, you head south, or wherever you might be headed, and the grazing piece might be really powerful for this area and for different reasons than you'd expect, right? So there's just so much digestible content with this one that can help not only people trying to become professionals, but just understanding your landscape and understanding, you know, maybe why your neighbor's doing what they're doing, or why the burn happened when it did, and things like that, that can cut down this knowledge gap where people can take the initiative to learn about some of these programs from the comfort of their own house. They don't have to show up at a USDA office to do it. And I think that eliminates some trepidation or question alone. So
I love that looking over the fence, like, why is Jimmy doing that?
Why is he lighting his whole pasture on fire? I don't get it.
You find that course in Habitat University, and you know, you can send that nosy neighbor that's looking at you, shaking their head all the time.
Or if you are the nosy neighbor and you think they should be doing it differently, find the course and say, hey, this might help. It can go both ways.
Yeah, you're burning at the wrong time. You're doing it all wrong. Here you go. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, Jake. Final thoughts, and they're all yours.
Yeah. Well, I would be remiss. We've got a lot of great content on Habitat University already, but we'll have a new semester coming out here in the next couple of weeks, and so please get out and check out those courses. They're a great bunch. On conservation planning. So we'll have conservation crop rotation, you know, making effective maps, how to read a seed tag, those types of things. But just more great content. And again, all the other courses that we have up there will still be available as well. But really, to wrap it up, I just, you know, at the end of the day, we're the Habitat organization. Habitat University is just about getting better habitat on the ground. So we want better trained conservation staff. We want, you know, more job ready candidates to fill the hopper as we have more positions open to deliver that work. And we want resources for landowners and volunteers and contractors that are doing this work so that they can go out and put the best habitat on the ground, be the most successful that they can in their efforts. And so, you know, if everybody involved in a habitat project understands kind of the fundamentals, the outcomes are just going to be better. We're going to have more habitat on the landscape because we're going to have folks with new knowledge that can get out there and do the work. And then the habitat that gets put on the ground is going to be that much better. And so, you know, that's what we're shooting for with this, is just trying to level that playing field and get as much quality training out there for anyone who's passionate about habitat. And one final thought, I want to give a big shout out to the staff that have put all this content together for Habitat University. We've got a great team working on HU. So thank you, Kat and Laura, for everything you guys are doing to make this happen. And also thanks to all of our staff that have helped by sharing content, reviewing courses, truth checking things. Really appreciate all the expertise and effort going into that. So again, thanks everyone.
Yeah. Habitat education, it's powerful, right?
Absolutely.
The more people that know how to put good quality and quantity of habitat on the ground, have more birds in the air for all of us and our bird dogs to find. So Jake Swofford, thank you very much for your time. It's a ticket off Habitat University. And Andy Fondrick, forever known henceforward as Upland AF. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Bob. Always fun.
Absolutely. I'm Bob Sapier, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always follow the dung. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.